All right, Brinsley. So in this podcast, I'm just going to be talking to you a little bit about sort of your positive mindset, happiness, gratitude, your mindset to your work for music production, your hustle, like how you're doing all of this. And, I've given the audience already a bit of an introduction to you because you go by the name Mr. Cha. And why don't you just like give the audience a bit of an introduction to yourself, and then we'll hop into the first question.
Definitely. Well, as you know, I go by the name of Mr. Cha, and I've been producing since 2012, so that's about 5 years. Stumbled upon FL Studio. I just thought, let me give this music thing a shot, because I didn't plan to go into music originally. What my plans were was to go into computer science, actually, because I really loved video games, and video games, that was the path. Like, I was hooked on them as a kid, playing them out, just sit there from like 12 to 8, Mortal Kombat, endlessly. I'd look up and then mum would be like, it's bedtime. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to like get off my PS1. And then, so I just got hooked on that, and I thought that was the path. But then it's like, sort of life just came at me, and it was just like, music just became like, a thing that I just came to for comfort, and it was just very therapeutic, and it was here. It was just like music. And then I was just like, all right, cool. Let's give this music thing a shot. I picked it up. I got FL, started making tracks. They weren't great. And then just progressed, started learning more. And then, that was pretty much it. And I've just built up just a progression through there over the years.
Yeah. So I think everyone, when they were a teenager at some point, was like, I'm going to make games.
Yeah.
Everyone gets to that point, at one point. And then like eventually you start to like move over into what you're actually interested in. So you're like, for me, when I think of like Brinsley Cha, Mr. Cha Productions, like I always see these two things as being, one. So for me, whenever I look at you, cause like we've known each other like nearly 10 years, I think 10 years at this point.
It's a long time. It's magical. Like,
for me, when I think of you or look at you or people ask who you are, two things that always come to mind are, music, because I think you're so like deep involved in music and music production, even just like listening to music and knowing stuff about like that industry, and just like you were just talking to me for like 10 minutes about Brian Eno a couple of minutes ago, like you know a lot of stuff. And then the other part is you're like overwhelmingly positive, like everyone knows you as being like the happy guy, like nothing like bad seems to happen, and when it does you deal with it in such a way that it doesn't even come across as like bad to you. Like you have like, this armor that like that protects you from all of this stuff. Whereas you see like a lot of other people, especially in like the creative industry, who like a couple bad things will happen to them and they'll start to like fester negativity. Like, oh, this video that I made, or like this Instagram post for my photography, like whatever it may be, or my songs aren't getting the views on SoundCloud or the likes, and that just like snowballs into more and more negativity. And with you, you have like this long mindset of, you know that you'll get to that point eventually.
Oh, yeah.
It's just a matter of time and patience. Just like Gary Vaynerchuk says,
that's,
you know,
it.
Like you have sort of like this mindset of it's going to work out. Even like if something went wrong, you would still be able to just like go around the obstacle and carry on. And so like I say, in this podcast, I just want to dive in on both of those topics, on like your music production and your work ethic, and then sort of like your happiness, your mindset, your gratitude. Because I feel like a lot of people could like, if they took anything away from this podcast, even if they're not like into creating music, I think just listening to how you see the world could really benefit them. Like, just take away a few things of how positive you can be, because it's a choice. It's not something that is in someone's genes. Like, it's how you look at the world, right?
It's definitely, yeah.
And so, yeah, let's just hop into the first question. So, like, I want to talk about more about the mindset first, and right, then lead into the music, because I feel like the music is the work,
yeah,
but the
mindset informs it.
Yeah, but yeah, exactly. So before you got there, you had the mindset, and that's what helped you get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in like 15, 20 years, something may interest you more than just music production,
oh, yeah,
but the mindset will still be there, right?
That's it. The yeah, mindset's permanent, but everything else is temporary. Like,
yeah, exactly. So, like, was there ever a day or event like that triggered sort of like this positive mindset in you that you have, like, Were you like brought up in a happy household? Were your parents molded you into like a nice positive person, how you are today? Like, how did you get into that? Was it natural, or did like your environment found that?
I'll say it like it just took a lot of work, actually. So I'll say it's more of the process. Like, I wouldn't say I was like entirely negative, but it's like I wasn't the person I was now. So it's just definitely through like a very rigorous process of like self development, just having like a lot of trials and tribulations, and just having that like all those tests. So when you go through all of those, you learn to see things differently after each encounter.
So, like, give us one example of one of those times where, like, something like that happened. And so, are you saying, like, your brain immediately went into, like, a negative way and you caught yourself and was like, you shouldn't be thinking like this, and then you, like, redirect it? Like,
Definitely. I guess I kind of have, like, a safety net. Like, I guess, like, kind of, like, a mental safety net. Like, I don't know how that works, but it's something where, I guess, if my thoughts are getting too, I guess self-deprecating might be the word, but probably lower than that. I guess I'll have a thing where it's like, stop, don't go any lower than this, stop. And then it just sort of builds up there. But it's a thing where it's just, I kind of have a threshold. And it's just like, if that threshold gets passed, it's kind of like an emergency. So say it's like a fire goes off, like alarms will start ringing, and then like, you know, people start panicking, like people run out and that kind of thing. So it's a safety net that I've like built, and I don't know how I've built it, but it's something just over the years. It's just, it's there. It's like a line.
A resistance. Yeah. That over time you've become more resilient.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, in the last probably like 6 months, I've really started to have, like, when you say like your brain like will say stuff and you'll be like, stop. Like, stop it right there.
Yeah.
I've always like struggled with the mindset at times when like I basically have like two voices in my head. One is like, this is amazing, like I can do this, you know, I've had these accomplishments, like I can like do certain things, like I've got like the power, that motivation, I can do it, I can like beat other people, like I can get to the top, sort of thing. And then there's the other part, which is just like, you're the worst, it undermines me, it tells me all of like, oh, but there was that one time where you like, You didn't work hard for the extra hour and you went and like watched Netflix instead. You know, like I have this other part of me that then like, that's like the easy bit. And then it goes like real deep and dark.
Yeah.
And it like really like tears me apart and puts me into this really bad mindset. And so I have those two parts to me. And for like the longest time, I've gone in between like wavering from like going really far to one of them and then really far to the other. I remember in like 2013, 2014, especially when I was really getting deep into like Kanye West and like Yeezus.
Yeah.
And like his like ego like rubbed off of me, but in like a positive way of like seeing myself as like an individual that could do certain things and like having that self-motivation to accomplish stuff. And like, then I went to university and like I met some people who were like better than me at other stuff, and like these were like condescending, very negative people that put a lot of bad seeds in my head. And you know, since then I found that I'd be a lot more like self-deprecating to myself, and I don't look at myself in a positive light that I should. Whereas when I speak to other people, they're like, oh, you did this, you did this. Like, you're a nice guy, you do that. And then I sort of think, okay, yeah, maybe they're right. But like, I don't feel like I should have to rely on others for that, right? And so with what you said about how you have this moment where your brain like tells you like, okay, that's enough, right? Because you have basically have like two halves of your brain. Like one's telling you you're bad, the other one's saying stop. And it was on... For me, it was on the 15th of November, 2017. I remember this because the next day was my birthday, the 16th, when I became 22. I remember sitting there and I was like, you always hear of other people, like these successful people who say, oh, it was when I turned 30 that I decided I was going to do this. And they go and accomplish something. Like they just switch like this thing, right? They make it sound so easy. Like, oh, it just became my 40th birthday and I decided I was going to do that company, and it grows into this massive thing. Or you get someone who's like, oh, I became like 35 and like I was so overweight, I then decided that I wanted to like lose weight. And then like you're speaking to this person who then is like a gym rat, and you're like, how did you do that? You know, it's that kind of thing. And I was sat there that night and I thought, I'm 22 tomorrow, and I just know like, Why is it that I never have these like epiphanies, like that I can just like switch it like that, like how they did? How did they do it? And I literally thought, well, you're thinking of it right now, right?
Yeah.
I was like, just do it. That's I was like, no one's gonna give you permission. No one's gonna give me
it's
this.
It's a thing that confused me for the longest. It's like, and it's a thing I keep still getting stumbled on. It's just this thing of like, I'm always sort of looking to like authoritative figures, like for permission on things. Like, sort of like if I don't know something, like I always ask someone, like, you know, how do I do this? Like, that's a good thing in of itself, but you almost feel like when you're too reliant on it, that can be a bit of a hindrance. So it's something I'm still trying to navigate now. So
yeah.
I can empathize with that.
Yeah, it's weird how like we. Like, I think, like, the thing that I'm going to say a lot in this is, like, we have the power to, like, do everything that we want because it's a mentality.
Mm.
It's, like, this is, like, a mental health sort of issue. Like, the anxiety and the stress that we put on ourselves, right? There's not really many other people, you know, who are telling you that you're bad. Mm. It's your brain saying, oh, that person's judging me as... you know, being bad.
Mm. But the thing is, like, it's definitely, it's difficult. And that's a thing I tried to tell to everybody. It's like, I think it's a thing I actually posted on like Facebook, like a little while back. It was just saying like the thresholds of pain for everybody are like very different. So it's like, we can't use a one size fits all method to like say oh, okay, you're hurting more than that person. That means you're this or, oh, you mean this or that. You might be weaker or stronger. It's like, no, like, very much everybody's an individual, and it's just like, it's all like on a scale, like it's very like the measurements are all different. So it's just like, you know, the way people go through things, it's very different. So everybody has their own methods, like mine might not be the correct way for you. And just like understanding that everybody has their own different process is super important, and it helps like people empathize with things a lot, because I feel like we sort of have a culture of where it's just like, people blame other people for things, where it's like, oh, you should toughen up, or you should be this, or why are you like that? It's more like you need to understand that individual's experiences. I think that's very important.
Yeah. I think it does come down to your own brain and like understanding yourself. And I think like having self-awareness, like as soon as you get that, or you're starting to develop that, it's, and you ask yourself the questions. Like, I used to just go through life just doing stuff, and just like when people talk about self-awareness, and the more you know yourself, the better you'll become. For me, like, I just thought, oh, like, I just carry on as usual, and then I slowly figure it out. And it was at a point where I said, well, no, I need to ask myself these questions. I need to think about stuff from a variety of angles, and then I'll understand it, and then that's how you learn.
That's it, you peel
because
back.
It's not like it's not like when people give you advice of saying, oh, you want to get muscle, go to the gym and like lift this so many times. You know, physical stuff like that is easy. Oh, you want to work, sit and work for like 8 hours a day on your project, like stay up till 2 a.m. every day working. Like, these are very practical things.
Yeah.
When it's mental and it's inside your head, I find it very difficult to do that. And it was only when I got to that point that I started to realize, okay, so it comes from me, and that's how I had to do it. And so when it was like on my birthday, or the day before my birthday, and I was saying, how do all these people like have these like revolutions, that like these things that happen to them on like a certain day, and they go, oh, it's my birthday and I did that.
Yeah.
I thought, well, nothing's happening to me tomorrow. Like, I know it's not going to change. And then I thought, well, I have the power to do it right now. And so I said, okay, from tomorrow, my 22nd birthday, 16th of November, 2017.
Marked,
I was like, from that day forward, I'm just going to be like really positive to myself. I'm going to like work hard. I'm going to do, and I set like these long list of things. And since then, it was weird. It was very, very weird. I've never had anything like this before. And I think it just shows like the power of the brain.
I think it's just because it's something you've set for yourself, and it's something.
Yeah.
You've made it like there's tasks for you to do. So it's like you can't really opt out because they're tasks that you've set. So it's just like when your mind is focused on that, it's going to like stick to that.
Yeah.
And obviously when you're building up habits, it gets quite tricky. But once you get the repetitions in and you keep repeating, your mind's already going to be accustomed to that pattern. So it's not going to want to shift back to anything else after you've done like the threshold of days.
I mean, for me, so I listen to a podcast, and I'll link this in the show notes down below on iTunes or Overcast, wherever you may be listening to this. And there was a podcast I listened from Chase Jarvis, and it was like a 20-minute podcast where he talks about the 2 a.m. Demons or gremlins in your head, right? And that was something I'd learned like 6 months prior to that. And
I'm asleep then.
And then when I was on that day, I thought to myself of that. Yeah. And I thought, when you always hear of people who have issues, when it comes to this stuff, they say you need to accept it and name it.
Yeah.
And so for me, I thought, okay, so with like self-doubting and saying my work's bad and that there's people judging me online when it comes to this stuff, and it would like hinder me. I literally was saying, that voice, I'm going to call that voice a gremlin. Like, and that's what I've called it.
Yeah.
And the single act of doing that and putting it on that day of like, oh, my 22nd birthday, like from this day forward, I'm going to quit a gremlin and that's what it is. I'm just going to be positive. It was so weird how it like completely cut it out. And since then, whenever those bad thoughts arrive, I just say, shut up, gremlin. I can't say it on the podcast, but I like swear it in my head. Like I get really aggressive at this voice and I like shut it down as soon as possible.
Damn, taking out the trash.
Because usually it would just fester. It would just keep saying things and I would just be like, oh my God, shut up. And like it would carry on and it would carry on and you'd start to feel like really bad.
Yeah.
And by like just getting to that point where as soon as you hear it and you've called it a gremlin, it's like you've named it is this thing.
Yeah.
And you immediately you've like, acknowledged bring it and it you've down.
Helped to actually separate from the rest of what's going on. Because once it's identified, you can actually say like, you know, you can put it in a box and then move it to the side. So it's not a part of everything else. So it doesn't get muddled up. And then, you know, you're able to pinpoint it and then be like, hey, I can see you.
Yeah, I think that's it. And so like, for me, I call it a gremlin. Whereas for you, you just say like, when your voice starts saying it, when you were beginning to, you know, be more positive and not listen to his voices, you say, hey, that's enough, cut it out.
Yeah.
That's sort of like your version of it.
That's
right?
It. So just methods. It's like what I was saying earlier, like individuals, like we've all got our own different methods and processes.
Yeah, I think for you, like how important is gratitude to you? Because it seems like everything sort of like stems from there.
Yeah, it really does. Like if you know me in any capacity, like whenever I'm out with my friends, I just say like thank you for coming on, and I just say thank you for their presence, because it's just like nothing's really guaranteed at all. Like I don't really expect much, and that's how like I like it to be. So whenever anyone does in like an act of kindness or just like really comes by with their time, I'm really thankful for that. So it's gratitude's very important, because we have to acknowledge what we have right now and that being enough, whilst also being able to set yourself goals and being able to want to progress. So it's saying if you have enough right here, and then that's it for gratitude. It's pretty much saying like, you know, I've got enough for the time being.
Yeah, I think it really helps with like mindfulness.
Yeah.
Like I remember March like last year, I remember like I messaged you one day because we like talk about these kind of topics quite a bit.
Yeah.
And I was saying like how I got like one as a, I think it's called like the 5-minute journal. It's like this gratitude journal where like every morning you write down like 3 things you're grateful for. Like what you're going to do that day. And I think something else, I can't really remember off the top of my head. And then at the end of the day, you do it again and you say, what was 3 things that went well today? What could have gone better? And once you like got into that process,
you're doing
like
the repetitions.
Yeah. And you're like, two
you're doing
weeks
the reps.
In.
It's like the gym. You do the reps.
Exactly.
You pick that
right.
Up, and then
it's
you
that
get
version
the pattern.
Of it.
Yeah,
yeah.
You get a pattern.
And like in like 2-3 weeks into that with that and like, doing the sort of the meditation from an app called Headspace.
That's amazing.
I just got into this place of just like super focus. Everything that bad happened to me, just like I felt. I could, the only way I could describe it is like, you know, in movies when you see someone like aim a gun at Superman, they fire the bullet and it hits him and it just like bounces off. Or, you know what I mean?
It just hit. It hits the floor.
It was like that. That's how I like mentally felt with it. It just felt very easy to just get by with things. I mean, like, do you have like a gratitude journal, or do you like say like a ritual where every Friday you think of say the past week and think what you were grateful for? Like, or does it just go straight from the brain? Like, how
nope,
do you do that?
I don't really just think about it. I just express it in the present and then that's it.
You're like God tier level then, right?
Inspiring.
You're just up there. Like for me, like I have to write it in a book for me to like get it out.
But that's very good though, because once you've got it in a book, it's something you've written, and like you said, like it's out there, it's like it's permanent,
it's
out there, it's in a space.
It's
and
not
when something
in your head.
Like physical is there, that's a really good thing.
Yeah,
because you can see it in front of you.
I find that it's really useful because you have physically written it down, that on those days where it is bad, I've literally like picked that book up and gone back like 4 months.
It's amazing.
And read like what am I grateful for. That's and there's they're like they're pre-made that's things
it.
That I'm already
and
grateful
plus,
for
plus
and they hit
you
me
have
like,
the
yes.
memories attached to them, and once you have the memories attached to them, it can send signals to your brain, and then you'll be able to relive that moment where you wrote that, and then you can kind of almost like get the state back you were kind of in a way.
Yeah.
You can get that kind of mood, so it just kind of transfers, you know. So that's always like sort of like when I look through pictures, or maybe me and my friends on a day where I'm not feeling too great, I can look back and feel like wow. And I would smile from it because I can remember what state I was in. It's just like, you know, memory transfer or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, at one point, like, I've looked back through the book, and under the section of I think it's like what went wrong today, or how today could have been better. And I've read back, and I've like, it was like a really bad day sort of thing, or something bad happened. And I read it, and even though it like was really bad at the time, now I'm like 6 months away from that. I see it and I realize that it passed. Like, wow. It's not an issue anymore. And even that itself can give gratitude and happiness, because you're happy that now is no longer an issue in your life. It's just basically just a reminder of just like, oh, you should be happy that this is now no longer a problem, you know.
Definitely.
Like, it's even though like it's not in your life at that moment, the fact of reading it again will just like help you out. So would you say that you force yourself into a positive mindset when something goes wrong, or do you default into it, or do you default into it now but you never did before?
Well, I don't really force anything. I just have to accept what the situation is, and then obviously, like, as people, we go through the moment of having to process with things, and having that time to process something is very important, because if you don't have time to process things, then yeah, it's quite difficult coping with things. But if I have some time to process something, I'll be able to effectively deal with the situation much more better. So I wouldn't say it's a thing of defaulting to it. It's accepting what the situation is for the time being and how to navigate through that, I'll say, is the best.
Okay.
Yeah, my approach.
So but I like how you say, like, you need time to
process
it.
Definitely. Like, it's super key.
For like me, when I used to, like, I never had like a process, because it's this thing of, it's inside your brain and not physical. It's like, to process it, like, your brain can just jump around to like five other things, right? Whereas if you're doing something physically, you're stood there, you're holding that piece of equipment, like a camera, you know, you're like, oh, I want to get better at photography. You know, you have to pick up the camera and walk outside, right?
Yeah.
Or if you're like at the gym and you want to like get better muscle, you need to like,
pick up
weights. So yeah, it's a real action. Whereas when it comes to like your mentality of like doing a process and just sort of going through those questions and seeing what's right, it's a real action. But it's hard to get to that point, because your brain is just, I don't know about other people, my brain jumps around everywhere. Like, it's hard for me to just like think of one thing and stay on it.
No,
like, I'll then start thinking about something completely different, or my phone will vibrate, I will look at it, and then I've completely forgot. I have a terrible memory.
That's it.
And so how I've then installed this process is through like two things. Number one was the book, having like the morning and the night, having to read that and write it. That there forced me into it. So that there made me do the process.
The patterns, like what we were talking about, the patterns, the repetitions, and the habit building.
Yeah, and then like, and the second thing was, I created a event in my phone, which I think is like 11 p.m. every Friday. It's called, hang on, let me get it up real quick.
I think 11 p.m. on a Friday.
Yeah, and the reason
that's
for
the time
that,
where people are out. Boogie.
Yeah, but I don't boogie, man. I just do work. I just stay in. I just work.
Focused.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the long term.
Damn.
And so for me, I found that like when I would go through that process naturally would be when it was late at night, like that. You know, no one's like coming into my room to like bother me. No one's like really messaging me at
such
this time. It's quiet, right? And so for me, I knew that like 11 p.m. on a Friday, I have like this attic window. I can see a good view. I can see like a lot of London from there. You know, I can see a lot of buildings, lights flashing, which I've always like found inspiring, just like seeing like flashing lights at night from like buildings, even though it's probably just like a warehouse or something, but from a distance, like, I don't know, I like
it's
that.
It's the inspiration, it's
and
the fuel.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
and like, fuel. It gets me into that mindset, and like having stars out, like it gets me into like this quiet space where I can just think, and
that's beautiful.
It's calm, right? And so like, I created this event that reoccurs every Friday at 11 p.m. and it's called Stargaze Friday.
Wow.
And like that there is my way of forcing me into that process, because like,
it's almost like meditation for you though.
It is in a way, yeah. It's like I have this time, it's blocked out, it's even if it's for just like 5 minutes, I have a post-it note that's right next to the window, and it says what went well this week, what went bad, how could I have handled it better. And like, just by doing those things at that time helps me like just get into it, basically, like, because I'm like I say, I feel like you're at this next level of that where it comes very natural to you and you just do it with ease.
I had to put the reps in though.
So that's why I think
the patterns. I think it's because I've done the work already, like the repetitions and the rep so long, so subconsciously. So I don't even know how I've gotten to the point. It's like, oh, I got here, but I'm not really aware fully to how I've got it. Like, I remember parts of the process, but this is the window of self-development. Like, if you look back to say maybe 5 or 6 years ago, like, you're probably a very different person. So that's kind of my thought process on it. Every day, like, you're a very different person to the person you were yesterday, because there's all these things you're building and all these variables are moving. Like, yes, your core is still there, but ideally, like, you're quite a different person because of your experiences and how those shape you through day to day. So I'd say that's pretty much reflective of my journey.
It's just taking that first step in the right direction. Definitely. I think, like you, like say, you feel like you've naturally fallen into it in a way,
yeah.
And then you developed it from there when you got to this point of recognizing that it was important. Whereas for me, I recognized it was important, but it wasn't coming naturally. I had to like put these processes into place for me to then get to that next level. I mean, let's just move on a bit for this. Like, what do you think is the most common reason for people failing or giving up? Like, have you ever felt those feelings? How did you get over them? Or are you like still dealing with them in a way?
It always comes back. It's nothing that like really goes away. There's days where I would have worked on something amazing, and then there's days where I won't even be able to make anything. Like, I'll be here for 2 hours, I'm trying to set up something, and then just nothing works. But I'd say it's a process of just forgiveness, just allowing yourself just to fail completely, just to completely lose out and just be like, hey, it's okay, I'll get back to this the next day or the next day. Maybe not then, but sometime, you know, just allowing yourself to fail completely. Because once you fail, you've already hit that point of, oh, okay, it's bad, so it's going to go up. Like, it's bad, yeah, it's going to get bad. Okay, just, you've seen how it is already there, so it's just a process of just going up.
What do you think then is that is the most common reason for people like failing or giving up on stuff? Do you think it is that sort of like bad mental like attitude, like it's that thing of not being in a positive mindset and more in a negative? Do you think that's why?
I'd say that's partially one of it, but I'll just say it's a thing more of just forgiveness and just allowing yourself to actually be like, you know, do something and have it go wrong completely, and just being able to pick yourself out and being like, hey, that's okay, you know, without sort of being so hard on yourself, you know, just really taking the time and just being able to come back at it. So it's a thing of forgiveness.
So what is one area that you desperately struggled with that you now feel like very confident in? Like, I just want to like pick apart about how you moved forward and sort of overcame those difficulties.
Right. Well, at first it was a thing of getting my stuff to sound up to scratch. So I had like a very like an issue with that kind of thing. So it was more like I was making stuff, but it just wasn't sounding up to scratch with what peers or like contemporaries were doing. So I was just like, ah, this is hard, I'm sluggish, I'm just like, ah, I've only got these sounds. But it was more sort of a thing of just like really locking in and just going hard on tutorials and just really just spending hours and learning what like parameters do, because I don't really have too much things like I really use in my own music and stuff and my own process. Like, I don't have too much, so I just work with what tools are there, but trying to really learn them more and trying to learn certain tricks to like enhance what I have. So it wasn't a thing that I learned overnight, it took me a while. And I guess you can apply this kind of knowledge to any other mediums, like not even on a music thing, but just anything, I guess, really. But it's just using what you have and being able to learn it to like a degree where you can manipulate its parameters and then just like work off of that. Like, that's what I've done. Like, I almost embrace it. It's like a strength almost. Like, oh, some of these things might not sound like up to par, but that's the kind of beauty, because there's like sort of grit there. And people tend to like that from, you know, they like that grit. They like that things aren't always perfect up to scratch. Something's a bit off. Okay, cool. That's what makes me stand out. Yeah. You know, it's a charmer now, you know, that's it.
I mean, like, do you have a favorite failure from your past that then later turned out to set you up for a future success?
Wow, that's an amazing question. That's gonna make me think for a bit.
It's the one that like people always like really struggle to answer, because it takes a minute to like think about it.
Wow, I have to look back. It's the whole thing of your podcast. You're just piecing it together, connecting the dots. Literally,
yeah.
I'm actually
that's the point.
I'm stumped. Favorite failure. Oh, I'm stumped. That's the thing, because it all builds and accumulates over time. So I wouldn't be able to pick like one single point and be like, oh, that's the day that went from that to that. See, that's the thing. It's like we try to measure our jumps in a way where it's like a springboard, but it's not even a springboard. It's more like you're walking up a mountain, so it gets very slowly accumulated. So I don't even have an answer for that, truthfully. Mm-hmm. I do not have an answer for that.
Okay, so how about if I phrase it in a way a bit differently? Like, when is a time that you doubted yourself, and like, what did you say or do to then believe in yourself or your work again?
I think it was a time maybe last year where I was making stuff. I was trying to work on my upcoming EP, actually. Yeah, that's a good segue. But yeah, I was working on my upcoming EP, and I was making a lot of instrumentals, and I was sending these out to people, and it's just like, people went, they were gravitating to certain things, but they were just passing up on certain things. I was just like, ah, is this not good enough? Or is this not accessible enough? Or is this maybe a bit too out there for people to, like, to sing on, to do things on? I was just like, dang, I don't know how this is going, kind of thing. And I was just so stumped about it, because I was really adamant and focused on like, yeah, yeah, this is going to be the one. This is going to be the one for someone. And then I just had to just let that go. And it was that process of letting go. It just be like, okay, that doesn't work. Let's do something else. Let's put that on the drawing board. And just, so I'll say letting go is just the biggest answer to that.
Okay.
Like completely just like just jumping out, springboard.
Springboard. That's it. So let's segue then more into like your work ethic and music. So at what point did you find that you started to fall into the world of music and the culture behind it? I feel like that's probably a great way to start.
Well, it's always been around me, you know. That's the thing, it's always been around me from growing up, my dad playing just a lot of reggae, my mom playing a lot of hip-hop and R&B. It's always been around me, but when I wanted to go deeper, I'd say it was just 2012. So really just connecting with the music there and just listening to just a lot of different things, re-going back, studying my favorite songs and why they're my favorite songs, like instrumentals. Instrumentals, that's
something that I've liked to do since, like, learning more about sort of like my craft, is then going back and looking at the things that I really enjoyed when I was younger, and then now that I understand how I did certain things, I understand why I liked it.
Yes.
And you see it from a completely different angle, right? Yeah, you get like this taste for it, and then you come back once you've built up those skills or those experiences or knowledge, and you're like, oh, that's how they did that, that's why that worked, that's why I thought this. And then that way, because you've learned and you've seen it from that angle, then you can bring that into your own work, which then levels it up next level. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's it. It's like study the past and how to weave it in your own work, and then just go for the future.
Yeah, I like the saying, everything is a remix.
Yeah,
like,
it is.
It's like, it really is. Nothing is original.
It really
is. Like, this is something that I've started to learn now. Like, nothing is original. Like, everything is inspired from something that came before it.
Definitely.
And like, I think it was Austin Kleon.
I recognize the name.
He wrote like a good book called like Still Like an Artist.
Oh.
And it was basically one of the points that he says in the film is, you can take from a musician, you can take from a cinematographer, you can take from a photographer, a YouTuber, you can take from an artwork on the front of a book. You know, you can take from all of these different places and you pull it all together with your own creative idea.
And do you know who the real winners are?
The people who get to view your content.
That's it. And the people who take things from completely different practices and then they apply it in a different medium, because the results you get are just like,
it's so different.
You wouldn't even think about that. Like, an example of that is I was watching a lot of Brian Eno interviews, and some of the processes he had were just like really meticulous. Like, it was almost like science, but he was applying this over to music and how things get spread over time. And I was just like, huh, I didn't know you could think about this in a way. And look at the catalog. It's just led to like groundbreaking discoveries.
Yeah. I mean, that's like the important part, is like what he says in the book is that you can do those things where you can take from different things, even if it's not creative.
Yeah.
You can literally take stuff from science, nature.
That's the inspiration.
You know, you can take things from everywhere. And as long as you like pour it all together and you put your own twist on it, your own like idea, that's then when it becomes this new thing where you've then stolen like an artist. He says that, like,
it's an innovation.
If you take from everywhere and put your own twist on it, it then becomes yours. You've not stolen that piece of, you know, it's not like you've directly copied.
No.
That's what I'm trying to say.
You've used so much influences to the point where you can't see how it's been compartmentalized unless, like, you are a really good student of what that is, and you're able to break down this by that characteristic and so forth. But when it gets very molded, very well, it gets molded, you can't see it. It's a finished piece. It's a finished piece.
Yeah, I know, like, Quentin Tarantino once had a good quote on this. I'm just trying to find it. I don't think I have any Wi-Fi. But he said something along the same lines of, like, because he watched so many movies. Like, he's one of the people who used to watch, I think, like, 15 movies a weekend. Like, wow, I remember reading before, he would literally go to his cinema at like 9 a.m. in the morning, and he'd leave at 11 p.m. at night, and he would just watch all these different kind of movies, and he'd watch them over and over and over again. And if you watch his movies, especially from the cinematography and like directing style of it, a lot of that you can see in previous movies.
It's the same thing with like George Lucas and like Star Wars. There's aspects where it's just compartmentalized from so many other previous works over the past 20 or 30 years. And you're like, wow, how did they piece that together?
I mean, the Star Wars story is so basic and simple.
Mm.
It's literally, there's a bad guy. He takes the princess. The good guy has to go rescue the princess. And sounds like there's Mario. All of these different, and I was about to say, it's like Mario, right? And you've seen this thing from everywhere. Like, I studied this at university. I think it's Prop or Todorov.
Right.
Search in Google, Prop or Todorov story structure. And it's basically this thing of like, there's the hero, there's a protagonist. You know, there's like the villain in this. You have the damsel in distress. You have the comedy relief, which is C-3PO and R2-D2. And like all of these things. And you can literally just take the Star Wars out of it and put in different people.
Oh yeah.
And it's literally the same thing.
It's a bestseller.
It's just it's the same because humans like stories.
That's it.
And
it's like the pop music of film.
Yeah, basically, yeah. And that was something that I learned. And like, Star Wars is so simple and so basic. It's just everything else that was built around that made it into what it is.
That's what makes it amazing, though. It's just how accessible it is, because when you break it down to that core, accessibility is so important. And it's something I like to bring into my own work. Like, I'll have all these otherworldly sounds and maybe otherworldly like practices here and there, but at its core, I'll reframe it in a package where it's very accessible. So it's like, you can be like, oh, what's this? This is a bit, ooh, I ain't heard it like that. And then you can just vibe and bop to it because there's a certain way I formatted it and structured it. You'd be like, oh, I recognize that a little bit. And then that's my approach.
I mean, you recently graduated from university.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you've been attempting to break into the music industry whilst working like part-time in a bakery. How are you using your spare time as efficiently as possible to fulfill that goal and sort of escape the oven's heat?
Well, it's just, you have all these time constraints there that I just press naturally. So you've got time constraints. So it's either I'm going to do nothing and that's just going to stay how it is, or I either attempt to do something, and I'm picking that option of attempting. So it's just getting the most important things done as quickly as possible, really.
I think like the most important thing you just said there was the word attempting.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people come under this thing of, you've either got to have the natural talent and do it since you were like a kid and you become like a master at it, or you just pick it up really easily and, you know, oh, within 3 months, I'm like this amazing photographer. When that's not the case, you need to actively try. You need to attempt. And it's only at that point that, at that point that you realize your potential. Like, everyone, when they start, like, Beyonce wasn't born out of the womb into like this amazing singer. Like, she had to practice every day. You look at amazing footballers like David Beckham, how he used to curve the ball. He didn't just come out and be able to do that. He didn't pick up that quick. He used to spend hours and hours and hours. Exactly. He attempted so many times until he got it so good. And that is something that I think a lot of people need to grasp, that you should try and just keep attempting, and then eventually you will succeed. Or if you don't succeed to the level that you wish, you will be dramatically better.
Yes.
But if you don't start, you will never know.
No, you'll never know.
So yeah, I think that's a good point that you touched on there. I mean, like, what do you define as hard work? Like, what does that look like to you?
Hard work is daytime job.
That kind of hard work.
Yeah, that's hard work. But in what sense actually, like, hard work?
So,
Do you mean like creatively?
Creatively, like, what do you see as hard work? Like, do you think putting in tons of hours is hard work? Do you think it's about making loads of connections and being more efficient that way? Like, to you, hard work, how do you see it? Because to some people, they say, I'm doing hard work, and they're working like 5 hours a week. Mm. And then you get others who are putting in like 60-hour weeks on their craft.
Yeah, and it's like, and the results are very different.
Yeah, exactly. And for some people, you can work less hours and still achieve just as much. Yeah. Like, what for you do you see as hard work?
I'll make the point of connections as hard work.
Yeah,
definitely. Just gathering the relationships and just building it up and accumulating it over time and getting it to a point where it's just natural and then just things free flow. Like, mm-hmm. it takes a while to get to that point, and it's because it's like, well, we're people and it takes time with people, you know. So obviously when you've got time restraints, you know, trying to build that time with people, that can be difficult. So mm-hmm. I'd say that's the hard work. But the flip side of that, I wouldn't say it's hard work, because it's about connecting. And is this, if you see connecting as hard work, then you're going to have some sort of, like, I guess you'll see it from a perspective of where it's like, it's detached. Like, you won't even, you'll dehumanize it in a way. Mm-hmm, yeah. So there's that flip point. So it's important to remember those things. But I'd say connections is hard work, though.
Yeah, I'd say for me, like, I have like a full-time job. Mm-hmm. So I'm working in that. And then as soon as I get home, for me, the hard work is then. Because that, for me, is then when I sit from 7:30 to like 1 a.m. every single day, Monday to Friday. Wow. On that. And then on the weekend is where I then work on those projects more, or I try and attempt to work with other creatives, like network in that way and develop relationships. And like, this podcast is mostly built on that, because I know a lot of people now, but I want to get to know them better. Mm. And I think by creating something like this, it allows us both to collaborate on one particular idea.
It's a whole, like, work product, it's a whole, right? Work. It's our first collab, it's our first official one. That's it.
And like, I think that that's important, that you need the balance of being able to create hard, like, maybe the hard work to create your stuff to make it better, but you also need to have the relationships to help.
Definitely relationships them. they're pretty much everything. It's like the foundation of just people. Like, without having relationships, like, it's a very hard life. Like, mm-hmm. I think so personally, like, it's very difficult. So having relationships is so key. Like, whether you've just got like
just friends, building the community around, yeah, you,
family, community is so important. Community is so important.
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, I've obviously was born and raised in London and in university, where all these people were like doing creative stuff around me.
Yeah.
This was like halfway up the country, and since so university ends, everyone like then spreads back. That's over it. The UK and some of them like around the world.
Wow.
And then I come back to London and I'm like, okay, now I'm at like ground zero again. I need to build up, because I don't know anyone. Not that, yeah, a process, few people such as, yeah, yourself. Yeah. But like, now, since I've been back since the summer, I've been trying to develop that so much more and create those relationships, because that not only helps me then have this supportive community that I can help them with their work, they can help me. It's, we have sort of like the, just the having been able to sit like this and just talk about stuff is more interesting than basically me just being stuck in my room working on this one thing forever and like not bouncing ideas off of other creative people. Like, you know what I mean? Like, definitely. For me, there's so many just benefits of having relationships with people.
Definitely.
So speaking about relationships, I think that knowing people in real life, especially creative people or business-like people, can be very beneficial.
Very.
But I find that I have a lot more contacts online because of the internet. Oh, yeah. And you're one of the people that I know that were very heavily involved in the internet back in like 2007. Yeah. Onwards, with like, yeah, social media was, yeah, still quite a new thing. So how have you found that opportunities have changed for people over that time, both in the music industry and out of it?
Oh, they've increased drastically, increased so much. It's, yeah, because I used to have a YouTube account back in 2007 where I would just post like a lot of Dragon Ball Z related stuff, because there was that whole wave of like a community of people posting a lot of like Dragon Ball Z related content. And yeah, plus I'm a big fan anyway by default, but there was a community, and then obviously like we were talking about, community is so important.
Yeah.
So there was that wave, but that only had so much of a following, because if you look at the views now, you'd be like, oh, that's not much. But back then it was a lot.
It was a lot,
but it just shows you like how then that's changed. View counts have changed. The way people communicate online's changed, even email exchanging's, mm-hmm, changed. So just about everything's changed in those 10 years. But I've seen a lot of developments. Like, remember YouTube in 2007?
It was a box. Like, you couldn't upload longer than 10 minutes.
It was a box.
It was just... Yeah, it's come a long way. It still has its issues, but it's definitely come a long
way.
Now
it's basically like TV.
Yes, it is.
Now it's gone from like a box and it's just like...
It's so much bigger than TV now. It's massive.
A network of its own. It's a network.
Yeah.
Like, it's like a Fox or like HBO. Like, it's just its own like way of life.
For me, from doing YouTube videos on both my old gaming channel as well as this new one on filmmaking, photography, creativity, that sort of stuff, the people that I've met in those have been just... It's been so interesting to watch their journey online and opportunities that they've been given, and as well as like seeing myself, how just by putting yourself out there, especially online, whether that be photo, video, and just developing yourself on one of these social media platforms, can bring so much like stuff your way. Like, I've literally like flown around the world because of my YouTube channel.
That's pretty amazing.
Like, I've gone to these incredible events. I've met more interesting people. I've made a lot of money off of YouTube. Like, all of these things is nuts. Like,
yeah, it's true.
And when I was doing it, these things came to me. Like, when I started, I never wanted those things.
Yeah.
Because they didn't exist on YouTube.
If it wasn't for the internet, I would not be making music. That's a fact. I just want to put that out there. If it wasn't for the internet and then just the way, like, you know, people like teach you things in tutorials, I would not be making music. Fact. That's a fact. When I get that out there, I wouldn't even be able to like sell music and make money like without like the infrastructures of like iTunes, SoundCloud, PayPal and things of that nature. Like, big fact. So it's changed a lot.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I wouldn't be a photographer, like an online video. Like, none of this stuff would have happened to me if it wasn't for YouTube with tutorials.
Well. Yeah.
Like, tutorials on YouTube are absolutely everything.
Game changing.
It's how you get started.
Game changing.
Like, you can literally just listen to podcasts on this stuff and watch YouTube videos on how to get better at your craft rather than going to university. Universities are going to die eventually.
In about like 5 years, like, you'll have so much information where it's like people can already surpass you by just learning these methods, and then you plus out all the mistakes everyone's made, so you cancel all those out and then you just keep progressing. Like, I can hear like what people have done in 2 months and they sounded way better than I was in my first 3 years in 2 months. And I'm like, that is just the beauty of the internet and their hard work. So you're able to cut around all these corners and it's just like, wow, how are you doing this? And then there's all these people younger than me, then they've really surpassed me. And I'm just like, that is amazing. Like, it just makes me so inspired. Mm-hmm. Like, so inspiring.
I mean, think about designer.
That's it.
Like, I'm not the biggest fan of designer's music. You know this.
I know.
But his story is like nuts. Like, he made Panda within 20 hours, something like that. Like, he made it in one afternoon.
Ascension, yeah.
He put it online and like Kanye picked it up. It blew up as well. And then now he's like this huge guy, knows so many people. He's getting money.
That's it.
He's successful. And
it's been a success story for everyone in this decade, like from like designer, Migos, like Bobby Shmurda. Like, it's just success story after success story, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you catch a wave, you put something out, people respond to it viscerally, like even Chief Keef as well, like that whole movement. But that's its own thesis I can go to, so I'll leave it there. But
yeah, it's like there is no gateholders anymore. You don't have to ask permission again, you know? You just start, you just do, and eventually you the gather the attention. Yeah, the people will decide. If you're good enough, you'll get put on.
That's it.
I mean, do you primarily use the internet to search for artists on websites such as SoundCloud and Bandcamp and then contact them to be a part of your music projects? Like, what's your process? How do you go about getting a vocalist on one of your beats, for example?
Just mass messaging to people I like. Like, if I hear something by someone like I really like a lot, just like messaging people. That's what it is. It's such a simple thing, just messaging, trial and error. So mass messaging, because with the odds of the internet, it's like 1 in 50, maybe 1 to 60, 70. So
that is hard work.
That's it.
That's putting it in.
It's needed. It's needed. Or else how else is this going to happen? So
yeah,
it's needed. And that's how I look at it. So I do that, do it across a couple different platforms, and then that's it. Whoever responds, and then we work from there. We keep email communication. Or sometimes if you're in London, I'll get in contact with you, I'll arrange, hey, you know, you can meet up at mine, or we can meet up at someone, and then record this, I'll bring what's necessary, and then it's a session. So it's either out of one of these two methods,
mm-hmm.
and then that's how the magic happens. Like, look at the resume, like, it's all there, like, check the work. Like, most of these collabs, like, it's all people, like, over the internet, like, the song Beneath the Eyes, it's with a singer from South Korea, so mm-hmm. I just goes to show.
So I know that you do that to reach a lot of new people, and you also go to networking events in London. Like, how do you network at events like that? Do you have any tips for making like a lasting impression?
I think it's the thing of networking and trying to get that connection. I just avoid that. I just talk to you like, hey, what's up? So I just really on a human level, just connecting.
Mm-hmm.
I'll stress that out. Connecting is very important, because once you connect with someone, like, they won't forget you. And then from there, that's where you build from there, from that point. So it's not even a thing of, hey, like, what's up? I really like your stuff. It's just connecting with people is so important. So I'd stress that.
Okay. You studied at the University of West London, mm-hmm. and there was a lot of talent that has come out of there, like a lot.
There was.
You've had people like Freddie Mercury of mm-hmm. Queen, Matt Tong of Block Party, Pete Townshend of The Who, Little Sims, Alex the Kid, and a bunch of other talented producers that have worked with huge artists.
That's amazing.
How did you find university developed your music ability?
Well, it put me in a real studio and like in a real recording environment. And when you're in a real recording environment, like, you have to make a lot of decisions very quickly. And I met very talented individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really happy for that. So being in there with like-minded people, that really helped a lot of like my world building around this kind of age. So
would you say that the internet and those tutorials taught you a lot about the beginning of music and developing your stuff there, and university was more beneficial for
expanding
the people yeah. there and the equipment? Or would you say that university also taught you a lot as well?
I would say the internet taught me more than uni.
Okay, yeah,
definitely. I mean, uni gave me the very practicalness of this and the experience. That's very important. But internet gave me those foundations and the groundwork. So you need both of those to thrive. But I would say the internet is pivotal, because without that, can't start up.
Yeah, I'm a big lover of the internet. I always think internet is king. It's the best thing. It's changed my life.
That's it.
In so many ways. And I always just recommend everyone out there to just start consuming content that is matched to what you want to do, and start just making your own stuff, even if it's bad.
Yeah.
Like, just put it out there, just start working on
That's
it. And
it.
Eventually you will work it out as you go along. A lot will come from that.
Magic. It's the age we're in. It's different. There's so much possibilities that we're not there. It's kind of like someone's just like, haha, just ripped everything open. Like, it's like a magic trick, and then just everything flies out of people.
Yeah, it disrupted everything.
That's it.
I mean, like, what is one thing that you would say you learned at university that was initially musically inclined, but actually has bled over into other areas of your life later down the line?
Wow, that is a really good question.
Did it teach you discipline? Like, what was something that
Discipline's perspective, coming in for like 9 a.m. lectures, that's a discipline itself. But on a serious note, I would say just finishing work and actually like finishing stuff, like really tight deadlines. Like, I had a lot of group work with my mates where it's just like, we would work on something so last minute, and it's just like, I don't do well under pressure, like, when it's last minute. Like, I've told, like, everybody that, like, my work colleagues, etc. But it's just like, I don't do well, but it's like, when you're in those situations, something has to come out. So, yeah, it's like, you get grilled a bit, and then you have to work through that. So, I would say pressure, like, it definitely taught me about managing through that. And there was one time I left uni, like, around 11 p.m. Like, that day was, I didn't get sleep. So, I worked on part of my assignment, like, I think, like 7 in the morning, and then just went ahead of uni, got there for 10, submitted it at 11. Like,
man, cutting it close.
That's what I'm saying. So it's a thing of pressure. Like, I learned about that.
So how do you manage all of the people in the production of a song from a producer standpoint? And are you quite hands off and let people experiment? Or do you try and keep them on task to get a specific goal in mind?
I just let them do their thing, and then I just hear it, and then I give my feedback, and then we just go off there. So I very much let them hear the song, feel the vibe. I let them do what they need to do. Like, I guess prompt them if they need. Try to give them maybe cues, like, psychologically or something. If I'm working with them in a session, I'd be like, go here. And just let them do their thing and just ease into it, because when you enter that, like, flow state, that's when the magic happens. And then you just got to capture that.
Do you do something like Brian Eno? We've mentioned him like 3 times in this podcast already, but I know he has like those cards. You know what I mean? He has like these cards that just say like random things, prompts on these random things that get him and his team to just like start thinking of something in a different angle.
I think like Radiohead have that method with coming up with lyrics. Like, I was reading somewhere about like they would get all these words, and then like I think they'll put them in a hat or something like that, and maybe like Tom York will cut them up in a way, so you get all these phrases, and then like it'll get formed or something, and then they'll start singing about that in that kind of way. So Yeah, it's definitely a thing of processes, like we were talking earlier. Yeah. Processes.
So what would you say is the most difficult part of producing?
Most difficult part, I guess it's sort of aligning a whole vision. What I mean by aligning a whole vision, it's like getting all these parts and picking out the parts that you don't need and picking the parts that you do need and bringing it together and making sure there's enough parts while removing out all like the parts you don't need. So it's a thing of managing parts and people trying to get their optimum performances, because I think that's very important. So it connects through emotionally on a recording, and time management and mixing.
Okay, so there's quite a lot there.
Yeah, there's a lot. It's quite jam-packed.
So a lot of it, I guess, then comes from just like cutting the fat in a way, just getting rid of the stuff that doesn't work.
Yeah.
And just really focusing in on the good and then building upon that.
Definitely.
Yeah, okay.
And people.
And people. What would you do if you knew with 100% confirmation that you were never going to reach your end goal in life?
Well, you just have to keep working at it.
So you, this is, I see other people have asked this too. No, they all say the same thing. They all say, I'll just keep going. Just even if they knew 100% they wouldn't do it, they would still continue to try.
I'm just addicted. Like, yeah. I wake up in the morning and I make a beat. I'm just addicted. Like, I can't even do anything else. Like, I can't imagine doing anything else. It's just like, what else do I do, you know? Like, mm-hmm. So I just do it. So I'll probably keep on going.
So here's the final question of the podcast.
Ooh.
What is some advice for people who want to be more positive in their life and not bring the little things down? I want to end it on a good note.
Yeah. Well, the first thing I could say is just, like I've said earlier, forgiveness, self-care, and just realizing we all go through the same faults. We all like have our own trials and tribulations. Like, everyone's is going to be very different, and I would encourage a lot of empathy, and I'd encourage spending a lot of time with your loved ones or having a community.
I think that's good advice. Thank you very much, Binzi.
Thank you.